how about we don't try and make food perfect? Because it's not perfect, just like life's not perfect.
If you're recycling, that's awesome. But you also need to look at all these other pieces, and you don't have to be doing them perfectly.
The first step is reduce, then reuse, then recycle. They are in order.
Get inspired by people fighting to make this world better for everyone. This is Unwasted with Imperfect.
Sarah Nelson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. You have what I consider to be an extremely interesting and impactful job, especially when we're talking about my world of fighting and preventing food waste. You know, you teach people how to cook at 18 Reasons in San Francisco. I think that's so awesome. And I want to dive into 18 Reasons, but I'd like to actually kind of set the stage for folks by hearing your take on this question. In your opinion, why is it important to learn how to cook at home?
Well, first of all, learning to cook at home is the number one way to reduce your food waste, of course, as you know. But the way we think about it is that home cooking is at the center of this wheel of interests. People have a lot of different reasons for wanting to cook at home. Some people want to become a world-class chef in their own kitchen. Great. That's their passion. That's their hobby. Some people want to save money. That's their passion. That's their hobby. That's one of my passions and hobbies. So bravo. Some people are really interested in the provenance of where their ingredients are coming from. They're interested in soil science and sustainability and small farms and the food shed of the Bay Area and where their food is coming from and how they can support small local farmers. They're interested in their own health, how they can reduce their consumption of processed food or fast food, how they can have more home cooked from scratch food in their lives where they know exactly what's in that food, or they're passionate about organic ingredients and grass-fed pastured meat and pastured eggs, and they really want to know that they're getting all those things. They care a lot about food waste and making sure that they're not throwing out a lot of food, so they get really into the planning aspect of home cooking. People have a lot of different reasons for wanting to learn to cook at home. We think it's important to have your own reason to figure out what that is. That's why we won't tell you what the 18 reasons are. Everyone has their own. But everyone has, everyone is on their own food journey, and everyone has a reason to want to cook more. And we believe that home cooking can solve a lot of those issues and help people advance a lot of the causes or things that they're passionate about. And then also just take care of their health, take care of their families, take care of their body, take care of their community, like take care of the people who they really care about. Like cooking at home is not usually just cooking for yourself, right? You're often cooking with people or for people. And that really brings us together around the table and helps build our social and emotional health also.
Amazing.
Really, whatever reason you have for wanting to cook at home, we will support you in that journey.
So cool. So no matter what your goal is, cooking at home may well be the first step to getting there.
It really is. I think it is.
That's super cool. And so, it sounds like at the core of 18 Reasons and your programming is getting more people into the kitchen. For people other than super fans like me, can you share a bit about what is 18 Reasons and how did you get started?
So 18 Reasons is a community cooking school. We are all about home cooks and home cooking. We are a nonprofit. And we got started actually as two separate organizations. One was a nonprofit that I founded in 2011 that was founded to teach people in low-income communities hands-on home cooking. I had seen a lot of nutrition education out there that was really nutrition-focused. And not that nutrition isn't important, but nutrition is not what most of us think about when we're planning our meals and planning what we're going to eat. Most of us are thinking about how we want things to taste, what we enjoy, and sure, whether things are healthy, but that's a really broad definition. And I realized that all of this nutrition-focused programming was telling people, you should eat broccoli because it has vitamins in it. And that's not really why people eat broccoli. They mostly eat it because it's delicious when you roast it, or it's delicious when you steam it and put a little butter on it, or it's delicious when you dip it in cheese. And sure, people know it's healthy. Everyone knows that vegetables are good for you. Everyone knows that now. We don't need to tell them that anymore. What people need to know is how do you incorporate more of those healthy foods into your diet in a way that is delicious. And our classes really do that. I knew we needed to do that. Get out in the community, put a knife in someone's hand and say, okay, here's how you dice an onion. Here's how you saute a broccoli. Here's how you make tofu taste good. Here's how you add healthier ingredients, or basically just more vegetables, because that's really what we're all missing in our lives is more vegetables. How do you add more vegetables into the food you're already cooking? Yeah. Most of us are eating plenty of meat, plenty of protein, plenty of carbs, most of us need some tips for how to get those. USDA used to call them five a day, right? Five servings of fruits and vegetables a day. They gave up on that because people aren't even getting five a day. They changed it to fruits and veggies more matters. Just like, okay, let's set the bar a little lower. How much is more? A little more than you're doing now. So that's really what we set out to do is tell people, look, here are the skills. Here's how you cut an onion. Here's how you use a pan. Here's how you follow a recipe. Here's how you shop at the grocery store. Here's how you identify what's in season. Here's how you save money when you're buying produce. Here's how you compare prices. Here's what's fresh. Here's what's frozen. Here's what's canned. Here's how you compare the three. Like all of those skills that you need to get into the kitchen and do more cooking and do more healthy cooking from scratch. So I started doing that in 2011. It was going really well. There was a real need for this in the community. People want to learn how to cook. They want to get their hands on the tools and the equipment and the ingredients to get cooking. Then down the street from us, there's a grocery store called Buy Right Market, which a lot of your listeners may be familiar with. And they're really a pioneer in farm direct sourcing. They buy a lot of their produce from farmers, a lot of their meat. Like before, 10 years, 20 years before Whole Foods was putting up a sign that said, Frog Hollow Farm, foreign pears, Buy Right was doing that. And they were buying directly from the farmers. They had this grocery store and they thought, how can we get people more engaged with the people growing their food? So a space came up in the neighborhood available for rent and Buy Right took it over and said, okay, we don't know what we're doing, but we're going to do education. We're going to have our buyers from the store come over and teach classes. They're going to do wine tastings, cheese tastings, cooking classes. We don't even know what we're going to do, but we're going to engage our community on a deeper level than we can engage them in the store. When you were grocery shopping, you were busy. You don't want to spend 20 minutes talking to the produce guy about Warren pears and how Frog Hollow Farm is this amazing farm. You just want to grab your pears and go. But through 18 Reasons, Buy Right realized, we can bring Farmer Al down from Frog Hollow Farm and he can do a whole class about his Warren pears and how delicious they are and how these are the best pears and we're going to taste them and we're going to have a cooking class where we make a pear tart, whatever we're going to do. People are really going to walk away from that class thinking, I am going to buy these pears. These are the best pears. Farmer Al, I love that guy. This is what I'm doing. They're more engaged than ever. And in my experience, it really works. Like when you meet a farmer and you hear their story and their passion behind what it takes to grow that perfect pear, that perfect peach, whatever it is such hard work. Like if you're paying $4 a pound for those pears, you should be paying $50 a pound because of all the work that farmer put into it, right? That farmer is working 14 hours a day to grow that pear for you and you're buying it for $2 and it is a steal.
Yeah.
So meeting those farmers gets people even more engaged and passionate about their ingredients and their farmers and thinking more about how does our food system work? Where does all this food come from? How can I be more engaged? Like, where do I fit in this world? And so 18 Reasons kind of started as a volunteer project with staff from Buy Right running these classes. And after a couple of years, they realized, wow, this is really taking on a life of its own. And we love what we're doing and we're reaching this one audience, but if we became a nonprofit, we could reach a much bigger audience with more diverse programming.
Yep.
And they were thinking at that time, maybe we'll spin it off. We'll start a nonprofit. I happened to meet the owner of Buy Right around that time and asked him to come speak at one of our fundraisers and he did. And after that, we really connected about what we were doing, what he was trying to do with 18 Reasons and realized, okay, this is a perfect match. I have my nonprofit status. They have all this great programming. I would love to have paid classes where people can come and pay for the classes because I thought, we'll make money this way to help support the free classes that we're doing. Spoiler alert, that's not the case. Earned revenue does not support all of the costs of our programming because if we had a business that made 100% profit, I would be speaking at the Harvard Business School right now instead of on your podcast. But regardless, we merge these two organizations together and it really works what we do. So we teach home cooking on every level to everyone who wants to learn. And that's whether you are coming and taking a free 6-week long Cooking Matters series with us, trying to learn how to save money, stay on a budget, make it to the end of the month with whatever your budget is for food, or you're coming to a French cooking class on a Friday night and spending $100 on that class. We want to teach you to really maximize your food resources, whatever those resources are. Like, we don't want you to be wasting money on food, whether you have a little bit or a lot. You should be spending that money really wisely and you should know what you're getting and why you're making those decisions. And you should feel empowered to make the decisions you want to make for your family. And that is whoever comes through any of our programs. We want them to feel like, oh, you have more ownership, you have more control than you realize over what you're eating, what you're cooking, what you're feeding your family. Now, I think a lot of where our food world has gone lately is taking that power away from people and saying, oh no, you can't cook. Cooking is hard. You should order a meal kit. You should get food delivered. You should buy a frozen dinner. You should buy something pre-made and pre-mixed. And that just is not only unhealthy, but also really unempowering in telling people that you don't know how to take care of your own body and you should let us do it for you. That's a really harmful message. Yeah. By telling people that cooking doesn't have to be hard and it doesn't have to be confusing and it doesn't have to be overwhelming and that you can do it, you really can, it gives people some measure of control and power back in their lives that I think our current economy is really removing from people.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, the cooking matters kind of encapsulates it all. Like that could almost be the title of your whole program because you're just really seizing the power of cooking and showing people how many positive things happen when you start to cook just even a little bit more.
Even a little bit.
Yeah.
I think we get an image from cooking shows on TV that cooking is this really complicated affair where you have to have all these ingredients you've never heard of and you have to have the most beautiful kitchen and the latest Vitamix. And, you know, I think Paris Hilton has shown us that's not true. You don't even have to know what you're doing to be able to cook in the kitchen. But I think what we see in our classes and what we show people in our classes, we show up in Cooking Matters classes in the lobby of an apartment building, in this teacher's staff room at an elementary school. We will go anywhere. We will cook in any kind of environment. And people see, oh, all I need is a sharp knife that I can get for $3.57 at Kamei on Clement Street. All I need is a pan and a burner. I am ready to go. I can follow a recipe. I can cook. I can use the ingredients I have. Right.
Yeah.
When I open up that box from Imperfect or I open up that box from the food bank, I may not know what's going to be in there. I might show up and say, oh, wow, there's a lot of spaghetti squash this month. And before I took that class, I might not even know where to begin with that. But now I know, like, oh, I can work with this. I had this other recipe for spaghetti. I can probably use spaghetti squash for that. Or I had a recipe for delicata squash. I can use spaghetti squash for that. I know what I'm doing. And that's that, again, that's that confidence, that empowerment that we're bringing to people.
Yeah. And it sounds like also resiliency. You know, it sounds like this really resonates with me. I think something I learned partway through my cooking career was a really good cook is not one who can go out and buy all the perfect ingredients for a recipe and make something really fancy and complicated. A really good cook is someone who can, with whatever they have around them, make something awesome. It's that adaptability, that flexibility, not the ability to, you know, following a very elaborate recipe, make something really complicated that takes 5 hours. Like a lot of, like, that's kind of almost easier than just like opening your fridge right now and making something truly awesome with whatever hodgepodge of stuff is in there. And like the best cooks I've ever met or known in and out of restaurants have always been of that mind. Like they can make you a truly awesome meal with just what you would consider to be scraps, leftovers, random mishmash of stuff. They'll know a way to transform it and show the power of food. I think that's so awesome for us to all kind of sit with and think about, you know, through your experience of cooking these classes, what are some of the most common things you see preventing people from cooking more often?
I think time is the first one, right? People are very busy. They're rushing around. The skills are the second one, and the money. Money is always an issue.
Yeah.
And I think what we try to do in our program is really address all of those areas. So time. Cooking, in my experience, is 90% planning. Hmm. Like if you're really going to cook every day and not just this kind of once a week blowout affair, right? You're going to cook every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You're going to take your lunch to work with you. You're going to have a breakfast made from scratch at home. You're going to eat with your family every night. You really have to plan. You have to know where you're going and what you're going to do when. You have to figure out, what do I need to do on Sunday to get ready for the week? What time? Oh, we get home from our soccer game on Wednesday at 7:30. Ooh, okay. Food needs to be ready at 7:40. That's a night we need to plan for. Maybe we make something the day before. We throw something in the crock pot, right? That planning can really help address that time issue. We also work on those cooking skills, which addresses both the skills and the time. So if you have good cooking skills, like you learn how to do mise en place, right? How to get your ingredients out and get them ready before you start cooking. You learn how to correctly use a knife. These things can really save you time and speed up your process. And they also build those skills, which help build your confidence. So as you do it over and over again, you realize, oh, I learned how to use a knife and now I can use it faster. I learned how to do my measuring for my ingredients. Now I can do it faster. Now I can kind of move things along. And then the money, you know, along with planning goes shopping, and shopping on a budget, shopping with a shopping list is a big one, right? Not making impulse purchases, using the store coupons and circulars to plan your meals, like using what they call loss leaders, right? If there's pork tenderloin on sale this week, guess what? That's what we're having, and knowing how to make those changes and figure out, oh, that's, I'm going to change my recipe. That's what we're doing this week. Knowing how to make the most of all your ingredients. Someone once told me that the most expensive ingredient is the one that you throw away, which I know is basically Imperfect's motto, right?
Yeah.
And if you are making really good use of all of your ingredients and not wasting any food, that's a huge financial savings, right? You're not throwing anything away. You're making good use of everything that's saving you money. You're also learning those really basic grocery store skills. We teach people how to read the ounce price on the shelf. So this can of tomatoes is 12 ounces and this one's 16 ounces. This one's $2, this one's $3. On the shelf, it will say 57 cents an ounce, 63 cents an ounce. Now you can compare the prices between those different sizes, right? That's something people don't really know.
Yeah.
Let's look at frozen broccoli versus fresh broccoli. People don't often spend the time to do that because we go through the store, we grab the things off the shelf that we always grab every week, this tomato sauce, that cereal, this loaf of bread, this broccoli, and we don't take that time because we're busy. Yeah. But in our class, we go to the store and we walk through the aisles and we look at all those things and we help people get in that mindset of, before I grab this fresh broccoli, I'm going to think, fresh broccoli is usually $2 a pound. This week it's $3 a pound. Let me go look at the frozen. Oh, the frozen's $1 a pound. I'm going to get that frozen this week.
Yeah.
People don't think to do that. So that's another way that we teach people to save money, right? Is not only making the best use of all your ingredients and planning, but also comparing those prices on a really detailed level when you're in the store and learning those little tricks to make it fast. So, you know, when I'm looking at all the tomato sauce, I'm going to look for a couple things. One is nutrition, right? Tomato sauce often has a lot of sugar and salt added to it. Let's go read those labels. What has sugar? What has salt? Okay, these five are good. What's the ounce price? 37 cents an ounce. That's the best one I've seen. Go in the cart. And now you know the next time you go to the store, maybe you don't have to do that again. You can pick some of those skills, like seasonality, right? You're going to use all the time. Oh, red peppers in the winter. Oh, those are looking kind of expensive. Maybe I will look for them frozen, or I will use something else in my recipe. So we teach a lot of skills around saving money that help people overcome that barrier to eating fresh food and healthy food. So we think that everything we do kind of addresses all three of those barriers, but those are the most common ones that we hear in our classes, and we try to address them all in all of our classes.
That's so cool. I think the bit about frozen vegetables too is really empowering. You know, obviously, like, I work at a company that sells fresh vegetables, and I think when appropriate, you should get fresh vegetables. You know, they're great, they're fun to cook with. But I will say, like, frozen vegetables are such a good fallback, both for what you're talking about, like, it's a great way to save money sometimes, and also build a bit of flexibility into your schedule, because that fresh broccoli has to be used, you know, now. That fresh spinach is on a clock, right? And I find having a couple of frozen things around is just such a nice kind of get out of jail free card on a really busy night. Maybe you forgot to go to the store, you were too busy, didn't have time, but you have that frozen thing, and it can kind of bail you out and just build more of that resiliency you're talking about. So I love that idea of just shopping smarter is like, you know, three quarters of the work, it sounds like, for cooking more often.
It is really planning and shopping. And then that's what we used to learn in high school, right?
Yeah.
Like, our grandparents all took a home economics class where they learned how to cook, but they also learned how to balance a budget, how to plan their meals, right? How to make the best use of all of their ingredients. Like, anyone who was around in the Depression or World War II, like, these are the skills that they learned in school, and they learned from their family, but it was really valued as a society, and it was prioritized that this is something that kids should graduate from high school knowing how to do. And that's been removed. It's been taken away from us, right?
Yeah.
And people are not learning from their families, but they're also not learning from their institutions. So they don't see that, oh, that's just the norm, that you should know how to do these things.
Totally. Yeah, Anthony Bourdain had a really good point about that, where he was talking about, it's a shame that home ec went away, like you're saying. And obviously home economics had a lot of really problematic gendered stuff, where it was a lot of times implying that, like, women are the only ones that should be cooking as the, like, the homekeepers. And he made the great point that just, no, like, cooking is something everyone should know how to do. Like, men, women, children, young and old, everyone should know, be competent in the kitchen, even if that's just knowing how to make an omelet and roast a chicken and make, you know, three vegetable dishes. Like, that's still, you know, head and shoulders above kind of the bare minimum these days. So I think that's definitely empowering. And I love that you're kind of bearing the torch for that. You know, can you share a couple of cooking tips you've noticed in your classes that are just particularly impactful for folks? You know, some things that you just think more people should know and you wish were kind of common knowledge?
Yeah. what should more people know?
Whether that's like ways to wrap your head around vegetables, you know, like for example, like one thing I run into a lot of times is people are really struggle with making roasted vegetables crispy and tender at the same time, right? Like that's like a thing I've run into a lot. And, you know, I'll commonly tell people like one, either like if you're doing potatoes, for example, like just blanch them first, right? So you kind of handle that internal temp. And so they're tender, and then pull them and roast, or just roast for like a longer time at a higher temperature. I think a lot of people don't roast hot enough, or they're kind of timid about the heat. And I guess like another thing with the vegetables I always think about is just uniformity, right? Like it's important to chop stuff into the same shape if you're roasting, because mm-hmm. otherwise the little bits are going to get scorched and the huge bits aren't going to get done, you know, the same way. Like what are some of the tips you've run into in your work?
Yeah, I was going to add, you can also cut them smaller.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Faster.
Yeah.
Cut them smaller.
Use the knife to your advantage. And it sounds like, you know, I've noticed that 18 Reasons, you teach a knife skills class, what, like every week? It seems really, really frequent.
All the time. It is our most popular class.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic class. Let's see. Cooking tip, add more salt. I think a lot of times when people think, oh, I'm going to cook something healthy, they think, oh, salt is bad for you. Now, if your doctor has told you that salt is bad for you, listen to your doctor. But if your doctor has not told you that, you are fine. And there, you will never add as much salt to your own food as you would get in any kind of processed meal or even any restaurant meal, right? Yeah. Restaurants use a lot of salt. That's why their food is so good.
Yeah.
So add more salt if you think your food doesn't taste good. If you still don't think it tastes good, add a little lemon, but always add more salt. Invest in a knife that you enjoy using. And that doesn't mean $100 knife. It's just like a knife that you pick up the knife and you're like, woohoo, we're going to cook. Do this. Learn it. Take that basic knife skills class. Don't cut yourself.
Yep.
You will learn how to never cut yourself again. I think that's really important.
Use that claw grip, right? You guys talk about the claw grip?
The claw. The claw is big in our class.
Yeah.
Learn how to cut an onion. Every recipe starts with an onion. So learn how to cut one.
Yep.
That's really important. My plate, which is the USDA's, which replaced my pyramid, right, with my plate. I love my plate. Here's my plate. It's this plate. Half of it is fruits and vegetables. What's on the other half? A bunch of stuff. And people argue about, oh, the dairy lobby, da, da, da. You can argue about that. That's fine. But if half of your diet is fruits and vegetables, you're pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's a great planning tip, kind of cooking tip to like, how do you prioritize the fruits and vegetables? Sure, people eat meat, they eat protein, they eat whatever they want, but prioritize those fruits and vegetables. And along with that, I don't know if this is a cooking tip, but eat more beans. Beans are great. Beans are amazing. My baby eats beans every day. She loves them. Beans are so good for you.
Yeah.
They are so cheap. Mm-hmm. They are so easy to make, delicious. And you can make a big batch of beans and then do a million different things with it throughout the week. So learn how to make your own beans from scratch, dry beans. You can do it on Sunday and have your baked beans and then use them all week long. I don't know if that's a cooking tip, but it's like a life tip.
Yeah.
Eat beans.
That's a great tip. It's very timely. I literally have a batch of beans on my stove right now. Simmering. Nice. For that exact reason, we started sourcing these really awesome lima beans at Imperfect, and I'd never actually cooked with them before, but I figured, you know, how hard can it be? Gave them the overnight soak and just gave them the slow simmer, and they're delicious. You're right. They're cheap. They're filling, great source of fiber, protein. I 100% echo what you said about beans. It's just like such a powerhouse ingredient that I think, you know, all of us could use more of in our lives. So that's super cool. You know, let's talk more about ingredients, because I think that's another thing I've noticed. People feel like they need to have every single ingredient their favorite recipe calls for, or they feel like when they go to cook, they don't quite have what they wish they had. So what are some kind of shopping tips you think folks should know about? How do you stock and kind of organize your pantry and your fridge to make cooking a bit easier?
People don't need as many things as they think they need, right? One thing we always encourage is to buy things like spices and grains in bulk.
Yeah.
If you can. Here in San Francisco, we're very lucky to have the Rainbow Grocery around the corner where you can go and buy a teaspoon of oregano if that's what you want.
Yeah.
So if you're going to try something new, like a new spice, a new herb, a new grain, you can go and just pick up a little bit and try it out. And then if you like it and you're going to get into rotation, bulk serves you there again, right? Now I can buy a cup of oregano and I'm never going to run out, and I can just throw it in my recipes as much as I want. One thing that we do in restaurants and our cooking school, and I do at home, that's I think really beneficial, is labeling everything.
Yeah.
And keeping things in containers where they're as visible as possible. So at home, I use mason jars at my house. I keep all my grains and beans and spices in just different sizes of mason jars or leftover jars, whatever, so I can see them. And then I label them with painter's tape and I just write on them what they are. And I do the same thing in my fridge. So in my fridge, like if I have a piece of leftover chicken and I put it in a jar, I will put a piece of tape on it that says chicken. Even though you can see that it is chicken, it is in a clear jar. Just having that label makes it one step easier where I open my fridge and it, in my face, it says chicken. That's going to remind me, eat that chicken.
Yeah.
So kind of keeping things visible, keeping things labeled, keeping things really organized, of course, like going through and throwing out things you don't want or things you don't need. Most people have too many things in their pantry and they're not going through them fast enough. So, you know, planning at least like one meal a week where it's a pantry meal and you really look in there and see, what do I have in here? Oh, I have beans. I have tuna. I have pasta. I have tomatoes. That's your whole meal. You don't even need to open the fridge.
Yeah. Right?
So having a well-stocked pantry, I think, is great, but also making sure you're using it up. And when you're buying something, thinking, what else am I going to do with this? Like, how am I going to incorporate this into my diet? Or is this really just a special occasion thing? I'm going to buy this spice I've never heard of. I'm going to try it. But I know that maybe is not going to become part of my life. I don't do a lot of that. I use a lot of common herbs and spices regularly in rotation, and I try to reuse things so that I'm going through my pantry regularly. And that helps me stay organized.
So empowering. It's so cool. I think, yeah, again, I would just echo the painter's tape trick. That's really empowering.
Get the
That's
tape.
Something. Get the tape.
Restaurant people will tell you have to cut it, but you know what? I'm a home cook. I rip it.
Somewhere a chef listener is cringing hearing that.
That's all right. You know what? We're not trying to get people into restaurant cooking. This is home cooking.
100%. That's important. You know, I came up in restaurants, and that was something a chef at Mission Chinese had really hammered into me, was that everything should be labeled and dated. And in restaurants, it's obviously even more important just because you're buying and going through so many different ingredients. But I've noticed at home, it really helps too, especially having that date on there, knowing when you made that chicken dish can be the difference between chucking something too early and giving it a second shot and preventing some waste there. And also, yeah, like you said, just being able to lay eyes on what's in your fridge and at a glance know kind of what you have to work with, I think is so crucial and empowering, just from making it, making your fridge more of a friendly place and not like an overwhelming sight for you when you open it.
You do have to be disciplined though.
Yeah.
Like if you open that fridge and see, wow, this chicken I made 5 days ago, I don't really feel like eating it right now. Too bad. You're eating it. Like, suck it up. Eat the chicken.
Yeah,
you didn't like it that much. Wah, wah. You have food in your fridge. Eat it. Right? That's part of preventing food waste too.
Yeah,
right? We had
absolutely.
Some gnocchi that we made last week, and I was like, I don't really want gnocchi for breakfast, but you know what? That's what we're having for breakfast. I don't know. We got to eat this gnocchi. Let's get it done. And it's fine. Like, it's delicious.
Absolutely.
All food is delicious. All food is good.
I love that. That's so true. And it's discipline, and it's also kind of a two-way street, because I've noticed like when I make way too much of something and yeah, I'm like kind of slogging through the gnocchi for breakfast, it's also a reminder, hey, next time maybe make slightly less gnocchi. And then you learn, and then suddenly you're not drowning in your own leftovers anymore. But yeah, you do have to hold yourself accountable for sure. You know, when you came to visit us at Imperfect, you know, that I had this idea like she has to come on the podcast. This is such a asset of an organization and an individual. When you came to visit us, you made a really interesting distinction, which was that these two groups of people you talk to at 18 Reasons and Cooking Matters struggle with kind of fundamentally different problems in the kitchen. Can you share and elaborate a bit on this?
Well, I think there's a spectrum, right? It's not like, oh, there's two groups. There are millions of people, and everyone exists somewhere along the spectrum of what are your food concerns. Mm-hmm. And it is an economic spectrum. And that same spectrum is, what are your life concerns, right? Are your life concerns, do I have bus fare? Or are your life concerns, can I afford a new Tesla? Those are two ends of the spectrum. But there are lots of points along that spectrum.
Yeah.
And everyone has their own concerns. That's great. Everyone should be met where they're at. And we really try to deliver education that helps people with whatever it is they're trying to attain. Because in the food world, like, everything is connected, right? And if you're out there spending $2,000 a month on organic and grass-fed meat, that's wonderful. You are pushing the envelope for all of us. You're moving us towards a more sustainable food system that hopefully will become more available to more people down the road. You're at the edge of that. That's great. If you're at the other edge where you're thinking, wow, if my food stamp benefits don't come through this month, I don't know what I'm going to feed my kids, or my kids are on summer break and there's no free breakfast, lunch, and dinner at school, I don't know what we're going to do. But we're trying to help meet all of those needs and help people really deepen their relationships with food in whatever way is interesting and valid to them. So that's, you know, the goal of all of our education is not to tell one message to everybody. It's really to meet people where they're at and listen to them.
Yeah.
Listen to their concerns and help them with wherever they are in their food journey. And then also, I think at the higher end of the spectrum, one thing we try to do is educate people about that wider food world and the struggles that might be out there that other people are facing. So if someone comes to volunteer for our class and they've never experienced hunger or food insecurity, you know, that class is an opportunity for them to learn what that looks like in their own community. And that's how some of our volunteers can get a new perspective, and people in our paid classes can get a new perspective on what the struggles are that people are facing. And that helps them understand their own struggles too, and like how they can get involved. And really, by being there, by investing in their own education, by investing in their own knowledge, that's a great first step, really opening your mind to the whole broad food world that you live in.
That's really important to think about. It is a spectrum, and everyone has kind of different struggles when it comes to food. And it sounds like a big part of your programming, it kind of starts with empathy, you know, starting with listening and meeting folks where they're at and not kind of coming with this one size fits all approach to cooking.
Yeah. And everyone has different concerns. Like if you have infinite money, okay, great. But you might not have infinite time. You might not have the skills. Cooking might seem really scary to you. You know, if you don't have any money, like maybe that's your biggest concern, but maybe you also don't have the time and the skills, right? Yep. Maybe you have some of those concerns in common. We meet a lot of people who are kind of stuck in the middle where they have enough money for food, but just barely, and they have very little time. And there's just information pouring on all of our heads about food and cooking all day long from every direction. We're seeing ads, we're seeing billboards, we're reading articles. We're supposed to be gluten-free. We're not supposed to eat this. We're supposed to eat that. You know, our friend's on a paleo diet, like our mom's doing Whole30. My mom got an Instant Pot, right? Like all these crazy things are just pouring down on our heads all the time, no matter where you are in the food system. Like these messages are out there and then bombarding us all the time and confusing us about what we're supposed to be doing and not really helping.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why we just tell people to eat vegetables, however you cook them, whatever you're doing, like stay away from the fads, follow what you know you should be doing. And we're here to help you figure out what that is.
Yeah, totally. You bring up a great point. It is increasingly a very overwhelming food landscape in America. There's just, as you said, there's so much noise, whether you open up your Instagram or turn on TV or you're watching something on Netflix, there's so much content about food. It's all seemingly really urgent and has new findings and new trends and new nutrients. And it just, I totally hear you. It can get kind of exhausting and, you know, fatiguing. You know, based on your experience at 18 Reasons, like how would you sum up the state of cooking in modern America? Like, do you think we're getting better at it? Are we getting worse at it? You know, is it something else? Like, where would you say we are right now as a society?
I think we're seeing some slight improvements.
Yeah.
I think it always changes with the economy. When the economy goes down, people grocery shop more and they cook more. When it goes up, people go out more. But I think that the rise of meal kits and subscriptions, it's not great. But it's not terrible, right? Like people are at least trying. They want to be cooking.
Yeah.
They want, you know, I think Blue Apron just changed their motto to cook more. Hmm. Okay. Like you're opening a packet of sauce that someone made. Oh, are you cooking more? Like, all right, maybe. But the dream I think is that that's the gateway. And then now you're cooking. You're actually cooking more.
Yeah.
Is it actually happening? Not necessarily. But I think there is more of an interest in cooking. Like there's certainly tons of shows and magazines and articles about cooking and debates about cooking and who's cooking and why and why not and whether they should be, whether they shouldn't be. How are we going to do this? How is everyone cooking? There's an awareness that we should be cooking more.
Yeah.
And awareness is the first step, right? Acknowledging that you have a problem is the first step. So maybe we're there. We're at the first step.
Yeah.
But you know, our classes are really popular. We see other cooking schools open and they're popular. Like there's a lot of programs in the community, like our Cooking Matters program. People are asking for classes every day. We get new partner organizations asking us to come and teach people. So from our little perspective in the little world that we're living in, there is a lot of demand. Like, people want this.
Yeah.
People are very concerned about their health. You know, they're very concerned about the environment. Very concerned about what they're putting in their bodies. Like that's certainly on the rise. And obviously home cooking is the answer to all of those issues. And the problem is nonprofits don't have $20 million advertising budgets.
Yes.
Right? We can't go around throwing up billboards that say, just cook food. Just try it. Like, yeah. We don't have that. Like, obviously I don't even have a marketing person telling me what that billboard should say. And as a result, we don't do a great job marketing for ourselves the way that like a pear doesn't do a great job marketing for itself, because it doesn't come in a cool looking package with a spicy dipping sauce.
Yeah.
And like an addictive flavor profile. Like healthy food just doesn't have that. It's kind of uncool. So we try to make cooking as beautiful and sexy and fun as we possibly can, and teach people like you can make those feelings yourself. You don't have to get them from a package. You don't have to get them from a billboard. You can create those same feelings in your own home. But that's a hard, it's a hard sell. So we're optimistic. I think we're at a good moment where there's more interest, and hopefully that will continue to grow as especially schools get healthier food. Hopefully, I know Trump's trying to overturn some of the healthy food regulations, but that's not going to happen, because when we have our first woman president, she's going to reverse all that, and we'll have healthy food back in the schools, because that's a real foundation, right? If kids aren't getting healthy food in schools, they're not going to go home and ask for it from their parents. They're going to go home and say, "Mom, I had pizza today. I want pizza for dinner." That's not their fault. If they're getting healthy food in school, they say, "Mom, I had a salad today. I want a salad for dinner." It changes everything, right?
Yeah.
You have to change those social norms of what we expect for our kids. And then that will help change like what we expect for everyone in our society.
Yeah. The expectation and marketing piece you brought up, I think, is so crucial just to think about that. Yeah, these huge processed food companies have, as you observe, millions of dollars of marketing money in their arsenal to, you know, fund studies and put up billboards and have flashy packaging and have, you know, weird health claims put on what is objectively just snack food in the store. And it can be really frustrating to think about. And also that it's something I've always thought about is, how kind of like the sound dietary advice is ironically just not sexy. You know, like eat your fruits and vegetables is like, that's been true for hundreds, thousands of years, but it's not like new and exciting. Whereas fill in the blank is the new superfood, or, you know, conversely, this thing might kill you if you're not careful. Like that's what makes the headline news. That's what gets books written about it and studies and gets stamped onto food. But ironically, like the sound principles are always there. They're just not screaming for attention the same way.
There's no money behind them, right?
Like, yeah.
If you see a study that says avocados are the healthiest thing in the world, that study was paid for by the avocado board.
Yeah. And like, it's,
there's no one ingredient that's going to save you. And anytime you see a study that says it will, it was paid for by that industry.
Yeah. That's,
we don't like to think of avocados as, you know, big avocado, but big avocado is out there paying for studies that say avocados are good for you.
Totally. Yeah. Always important to follow the money and ask like, who's paying for this? And you know, a general rule of thumb I heard, I think is from Michael Pollan, is basically if you're reading a health claim on a package, definitely take it with a grain of salt, because, you know, food companies pay a lot of money to be able to put health claims on their packaging. So like if you're learning about the healthiness of something from a package, it's kind of suspect knowledge. Whereas if it's just, you know, generally accepted knowledge or something, especially like, I feel like it just follow what makes you feel good. You know what I mean? Like if you feel terrible after eating something, that might be a sign that it's not great for you. You know, if you're crashing, if your blood sugar just drops after eating that donut or that package of snacks or whatever, like for me, that's always a sign like, like that doesn't vibe with my system, you know?
And you know, not everyone makes that connection. Like we've had this conversation in classes where we talk about, you know, when you eat a meal at a fast food restaurant, like how do you feel afterwards? And so people think about it like sometimes for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I don't feel great. Like when I don't have breakfast and I just have a coffee, I don't feel that good by lunch.
Yeah.
And people are pretty disconnected from their own bodies. And that just brings them back into that mindset. Like, oh, I can change the way I feel. One very common thing people report in our classes is from the first class to the last class, a lot of people will quit drinking soda or reduce their soda consumption.
Really?
And they notice immediately that they feel different.
Huh.
And they lose weight. Like, you want to lose 10 pounds? Stop drinking 6 sodas a day. You'll be good in 6 weeks, right? Like people can make that one change. People drink a lot of soda, as we know. And if you make that one change, you can see the difference really quickly in how you feel, how you look, everything.
Yeah.
And that can inspire you to make more changes. You think, oh, I made that one little change and it made a big difference. And it's something I never really thought about before. I thought, you know, I love this. It's a pick me up. It's my treat when I finish dropping off my kids. It's my treat when I got off of work. It's my treat with my lunch. This is how I get through my day. And you take a step back and think, well, what is this doing in the bigger picture of my life? And can I actually make this change? Do I have the power and control over my own life? Do I feel like I do to make that change for myself? And if you make a little change like that, like maybe you start cooking one extra time a week, because we send you home from our Cooking Matters classes with a bag of fruits and vegetables. So you better go home and cook that. Even just that one extra meal of healthy fruits and vegetables every week, that might start to make that change where you realize, oh, this really makes everyone happy, makes me feel good. It's helping me get back in the kitchen more. I learned how to do this in class. I can totally do it at home. That's going to build my cooking confidence. That's going to help move that forward for everyone.
So important. Yeah. It seems to me kind of like the difference between like what I'd call almost short-term fun and long-term fun. Like I've noticed in my eating, like when I started to take breakfast more seriously, I just like, to your point, felt so much better throughout the day. Like, yeah, it was like short-term felt really great to like have some cereal or like a cinnamon bun in the morning. But then I just noticed time and time again, my blood sugar would just drop off a cliff an hour later and I'd have no energy. And yeah, I'd need that coffee or another snack to just like jolt me back awake. Whereas when I started eating like protein and especially fiber in the morning, like to your beans point, like having beans in the morning for me just made me feel a lot more energized and have that sustained energy throughout the day. And so, yeah, I think it's so important.
Right? Have a bowl of oatmeal. A big bowl of beans. Like start your day in a healthy way.
Little switches that kind of have a long payoff. I think it's super impactful. You know, obviously food waste is really near and dear to my heart and our heart and Imperfect. You know, I'd love to hear a bit about, you know, how does waste come up in your classes and what sort of struggles with food waste do you see and how do you help people waste less in their lives?
I think the biggest way that people waste food is they put leftovers or ingredients in their fridge and they forget about them or they don't want to deal with them. And often that's fresh produce or often it's leftovers. Like those are kind of the two biggest things. Leftovers often, especially if you get them from takeout, they're in a white box. You don't know what's in there. That's not good. Put your tape on it, label it, get it done, put it on your meal plan. Right. Or ingredients, like let's say you buy a bunch of parsley and your recipe calls for half a bunch of parsley. Okay, here's a cooking tip that will change your life. Put the whole bunch of parsley in. Never use half a bunch of herbs. Just put it all in.
Yeah.
That's my world-changing cooking tip. Because what are you going to do with that other bunch of parsley, right? Although you can save it. Put it in a glass of water like it's a bunch of flowers.
Yep.
Put it in your fridge. It will last longer. But you know what? Why not just use it all? Parsley's delicious. Cilantro's amazing. Just use it all. You can never have too many herbs. You can never have too much garlic. Just put it all in. So I think, having those either leftover ingredients or ingredients that you're not quite sure about, like that ends up being the ingredient that may not make it to the end of the week. One thing that we do in my house, there's two produce drawers. The right-hand drawer, we put everything that has to be used first. In the left-hand drawer, those things can stay a little longer. And when new things come in, okay, are we going to move something from the left to the right? Where are we going to put this? That really helps us just mentally prioritize, like, wow, that right-hand drawer is really full. What's going on? We got to get in there. And it seems like a really simple thing, but since we started doing that, we've not thrown away any produce. It all gets used. I think also prepping. So if you get a bunch of zucchini, cut them up, put them in a Tupperware, put them in a plastic bag, put them in your fridge. Now you have cut up zucchini. Now you're ready to go. You're going to throw those in a pan. You're going to start moving. You're going to get cooking. So again, that kind of planning and prepping is so important. And then I think in terms of wasting leftovers, right? People often, like you said, they make too much or they make something they don't really love and they can't think of like, how can I make this into something I love? Or how can I just put it on the menu in a way that we're going to get it done? A lot of consumers who are on a really tight budget are hesitant to try new ingredients because they're worried about wasting. Right? Yeah. Wasting food is wasting money. So that's like a food waste issue before there's even food waste. People think, am I going to buy these mushrooms? Because what if my kids don't like them? Now I've wasted my money and I have nothing to feed my kids. Now what? And through our program, we try to introduce people to a lot of new ingredients as well as familiar ingredients for free. So you're in our class and you had mushrooms in a stir fry and you realize, okay, I actually like these. My kid actually liked them. I'm going to get them in my take home bag. I'll try them again at home. And now maybe this is something that I know I like, and I'm not going to be afraid to waste my money on that at the store because I'm afraid of that ingredient going to waste. If you're on a really tight budget, you know, food waste is terrifying because it's wasting money like twice, right? Now you don't have the money and you have nothing to feed your kid.
Totally. I appreciate you bringing that up. I think, for any parents listening, they probably can relate to this, that it is a real anxiety and a tension in a household. And we've had parents write into Imperfect saying like, yeah, it can be really hard to get your kids stoked about vegetables. And it's kind of this, it can be a hard road to walk of like, you want them to eat vegetables, but also you don't want to waste food. So it's like this weird tension. Like, you know, what advice do you have for parents who have kids and they're trying to, yeah, maybe try new things, but they don't want to make the kid a meal that the kid's just not going to eat. And then the whole thing goes to waste. Like how as a parent can you find ways to reduce waste?
Get your kid a knife and get them in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Kids will eat almost anything that they cook themselves.
Really?
And we see this in our kids' classes, in our family classes. Parents will say, oh, my kid doesn't like tomatoes. My kid doesn't like onions. I'm like, well, your kid just made pico de gallo and he's eating it. So what? Get, you know, there's a knife. It's called, the company's called Curious Chef. It's a plastic serrated knife. Sometimes it's called a lettuce knife. And yeah, it's a really safe knife that any kid can use. But by the time a kid is 6 or 7 or 8, if you're supervising them, they can have a regular knife. They can help you with cooking. Yeah. So get your kids involved, even if it's just washing the vegetables, setting the table, putting things away from the store, helping you pick out, you know, do you want a green pepper or a red pepper? Like, get your kids involved as early as possible in that process of planning and shopping and cooking in a healthy way. Not just like, oh, if you follow, if you go through the store with me and you don't complain, I'll get you a cupcake. Like, get them involved. You know, help me pick out what kind of bread we're going to get. Like, do you want the crunchy peanut butter or the smooth peanut butter? Whatever it is, however you can get them involved. And then keep offering. And this is where, yes, kids will waste a little bit of food. They will. You know, they'll try it and they won't eat it. You can always eat it. You know, if you're not, hopefully most parents like lose their germophobia at some point in their parenting career and you just like finish it off. Like, I've eaten noodles off the floor that my kid threw there. Why not? They're good noodles. I clean the floor every night after she throws food on it. It's clean enough. I'm not going to waste these noodles. So, but keep offering, even if it's just a little bit, and offer it in different ways. So if you're trying to get broccoli into your kid's diet, offer it roasted and then steamed and then raw. Offer it with a dip. Kids are obsessed with dip. Make a hummus, make a ranch, give them the broccoli, give them the ranch and the hummus, and then give them tomato sauce or give them pesto, like vary your dips up, right? Keep offering and keep making it a normal part of the dinner, and don't use positive and negative language around food. That's really important. Not, you know, don't say, oh, if you eat your broccoli, you can have dessert. Because now you've told the kid that dessert is good and broccoli is bad, which is not the message you're trying to send. You're trying to tell them that broccoli is good and dessert is bad. Actually, you're trying to tell them that nothing is bad. Everything is good. All food is good, as I said before, right?
Yeah.
Make all foods neutral. All foods are fine. If a kid says, oh, I want candy, that's not on the menu tonight.
Yeah.
Here's your broccoli. You're the parent. You're the boss. Be the boss and keep offering. And it's frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating. My baby's really little and she eats everything I give her. But I know once they get to be toddlers and they just say no to everything, that's okay. Go with the flow. They don't want to eat dinner. They don't have to eat dinner. When they're hungry, they'll eat. And you're the parent. You're the boss. You keep offering. And most importantly, you keep modeling.
Yeah.
I had a parent in a class tell me, I want my 4-year-old to eat healthy, but she just wants to eat what I eat. It's okay, sir. Here's what we're going to do first. You are going to eat a vegetable. Then we'll see about your kid eating a vegetable, right?
Yeah.
If there is no unhealthy food on your plate, if everything that you have on your own plate is what you want your kid to eat, no problem, right? If someone says, oh, my kid only eats dinosaur-shaped chicken nuggets, well, how do they even know those exist? Kids didn't think that up, right? You offered it to them. So I know it can be frustrating and it takes repetition and it takes building those rituals and routines into your life. You know, rituals are really important for kids. Routines are really important for kids, right? They all, you know, they have to take their nap at 10 and if it's 10:05, they lose their mind, right? It's the same with food and cooking. Like if they expect we're going to start cooking when we get home and we're going to work together and we're going to put the meal on the table and we're going to sit down together and we're going to have that meal and it doesn't have to be dinner. I know people are busy and they're working multiple jobs. Maybe it's breakfast. Maybe that's your family meal. Maybe it's one day a week on Saturday, you have your family meal. But you build those rituals into your day and into your week where you're spending that time together and you're modeling for the kid, eating healthy, enjoying food. You talk about the food, talk about the flavors and the textures, talk about what it looks like, what it tastes like really engage the kid with food instead of turning it into a battle of like, you got to clean your plate. You got to take 2 bites of this. You can't have dessert till you do this. Like all these kind of threats that don't work in the long run. Like those don't create healthy eating behaviors. They don't create a positive food environment for the kid. So yeah, it's a lot of work, but I mean, parents know this. Parenting is a lot of work. Yeah. You got to put in the work. And if you don't put in the work, that's okay. You don't have to. Everyone can parent. There's no certificate for parenting, right? You do whatever you want. But if you don't put in the work, you're not going to get the outcome.
Yeah.
If you just yell at your kid to eat their broccoli and they force down 2 bites every night, that kid's never going to learn how to like broccoli because you're not putting in the work. So you got to put in the work, like with anything else with kids, you got to work with them. Get them in the kitchen. Don't be afraid. They're not going to cut themselves. Get them a lettuce knife. Get them in the kitchen. Kids are smart. They can do everything. You know, 200 years ago, six-year-olds were out milking cows and cooking dinner for the whole family, right? Like, they can still do that. We have not genetically changed in the past 200 years. We are the same people. We can do it. Kids can do a lot.
No, I appreciate you sharing that. It's a really honest, kind of candid, thoughtful advice for parents out there. I think, you know, I remember as a kid, I think I was super picky. You know, my mom figured it out. My dad figured it out. But yeah, I think everyone is familiar with that kind of hostile standoff over that bowl of peas or carrots. And you're right. It's really unfortunate and frustrating for the kid and the parent to have it be this antagonistic tug of war. But I love what you said about involving the kid. You know, we've heard that from imperfect customers that when their kid is involved in even just picking out what goes in the box and then unpacking it, and maybe washing it or chopping it together, the kid is suddenly magically stoked about the carrots they might have refused to otherwise eat. So I love that. Make it a conversation. You know, I guess just a personal side, you know, my dad found out pretty early that I guess my sister would eat anything if he chopped it into bite-sized cubes, stuck a toothpick in it, and called it niblets. and not saying that like that's what you should do, but I think it does speak to your point of like, if you make it fun and involved for your kid and, you know, not cater to everything they demand, but make food a fun and interesting thing for them. It's, you know, it's remarkable. Like you said, like they will get interested. You just have to be involved and not be, you know, maybe more of like an authoritarian in the kitchen, because none of us adults don't respond well to people telling them what to eat, right? So it seems like a part of what you're saying is extend that empathy you'd want for yourself to your kid. Of if you don't like being bossed around, they probably also don't,
right?
Right.
That's very sage advice.
Exactly. How would you want someone to tell you what to eat? That's such empowering advice. You know, start them young. I think that's super helpful. And what a positive note to end on here. I'd love to get to the speed round now. Some fun closer questions to get to know you a bit better. Are you ready to go?
Let's go.
Amazing. Okay. Is there any kind of follow-up ask you have for folks listening or something we've talked about that you think they should really dig in more on their own time?
Obviously come to 18 Reasons to Take a Cooking Class. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But even beyond that, because we really believe that people should be cooking more, do something in your own life that you haven't done before around cooking. Make some brownies for your neighbor. Host a gathering at your house for your friends to make dumplings together. It's Chinese New Year this week. Like, get all your buddies together and make dumplings. Like, do something new with the people in your life. Maybe people you know or people you don't know, people who live in your apartment building, invite them over for cheese and crackers. Like, do something around food that you've never done before that engages with people in your life.
That's amazing. I heard about an idea recently I love and I hope folks will try, which is you have a dinner party where everyone brings a food they've never tried before. And I just love that idea of like literally, invite novelty to the table, but make it a fun, safe thing that you can do together. So you can all kind of taste and experiment and try and discuss. I think that's so awesome. Super cool. What's a positive change you've made in your life in the past year you think that folks listening should try?
Okay, this is really nerdy. We make our meal plan on our fridge on a big magnet board that has the days of the week. And we write on each day of the week what we're going to make for dinner. And that is what we have for lunch the next day, leftovers. So that's it. Just the dinners on the fridge. So we can all see and we all know what's going on. And then at the end of the week, I have a notebook and I write down the meal plan for that week in my notebook. So I do it. So it's retrospective. So I get to the end of the week, I write all the recipes down. I erase the board. We start over. And sometimes during the week, it might change. We went out, we made too much of this, whatever. And I make sure that's on the board. And then I write this. And this is giving me this whole year of recipes, or not even recipes. Like tonight we're having tempeh and carrots and rice, I think. And I don't even know what I'm doing. I think I'm going to roast the tempeh and carrots. I've got my rice in my rice cooker on a timer. It's going to be ready at 6 o'clock because I love my rice cooker on my timer, which I've had that for 10 years. So that's on it. We get a rice cooker with a timer or anything with a timer. Amazing.
Do you have a rice cooker brand you'd recommend?
No, just get a rice cooker that has a timer. Anyone, they're all great. They literally just make rice or oatmeal. You can have it turn on at 7 a.m. and have your oatmeal ready. That's delicious. So it just says tempeh, carrots, and rice. Great. So I'm going to come home, I've got my tempeh and my carrots already chopped. I'm going to throw them in the oven, roast them up. And then at the end of the week, I write that down. So now I can look back and think, oh, gosh, what were we making in July? What's some recipe that I made once that I forgot about? We made something and I forgot how much we loved it. And as the seasons change, I can see it changing. And this is a long-term project where I'll be able to look back on January, next January, back at this January, and say, what were we making in January? Oh, we made roasted cabbage. That was delicious. Let's make that again. And it might be something that I totally forgot about because I like to try new things. Now, not everyone likes to do this. Some people have their Taco Tuesday and every Tuesday they have the same thing. They have tacos. That is great. Whatever works for you. But writing it down, even retrospectively, just having like a little meaty food diary that's very, very basic, helps me kind of stay inspired and trying new things and thinking about, you know, what did I make a year ago that I might like to make again? Because that helps keep variety in my cooking. And I love having variety. And I think a lot of people do, even people who do Pasta Wednesday, Taco Tuesday, they vary what they're doing. And you can certainly vary that with meal planning. But writing it down afterwards has really helped kind of re-inspire me every time I look through that notebook.
That's awesome. What a great tip. Leave a paper trail for yourself so that you can learn from your kind of greatest hits and sounds like build a little bit of a repertoire. So cool. If you're cooking for somebody and you want to make them feel loved, what are you going to make for them?
Ribs.
Ribs.
Ribs make everyone feel loved. Ribs are great.
Any particular method or glaze or sauce or how do you do them?
I slow cook them in my oven.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have a slow cooker. I have an oven. And I just use a big Dutch oven, a big pot, and I put meat in it. I put it in at 250 degrees and I cook it while I'm at work all day. So I've made really good Mexican style ribs where you put beer in and cumin, oregano, spices, a little bit of honey. And then when you come home from work, you crank up the heat, take the top off, and it kind of boils down to a little glaze. Those are delicious. I made some Italian ribs recently where I rolled up the rack of ribs with a bunch of herbs like rosemary and thyme in the middle and some salt and pepper. Roll those up, stick them in my pot, go to work, come home. Delicious. Ribs are amazing. They're really cheap. You can season them 1,000 different ways and they can be delicious. And you get to eat with your hands. There's bones involved. You're picking them up. You're just having the best time.
Yeah.
Like anytime you make ribs, everyone literally will just say, ribs. That's how you know they feel loved.
Oh, that's awesome. What's an ingredient you couldn't live without?
Well, I would say salt, but I already mentioned salt. And then I would probably say butter. I love butter. I was a vegan for a year. It was a hard time. I was in high school and I was a punk and, you know, times were tough. But now I have butter all the time and everything. I absolutely love it. I think it's so delicious. Sometimes I just eat a little bit of butter for dessert.
Amazing. That's awesome. And what is your least favorite thing to waste?
I would say a vegetable, but that's a very broad category. Herbs really comes to mind because I always know I could have used them because herbs are so flexible. And if you're throwing out some herbs, you're like, God, I've made 15 meals since I bought this bunch of herbs. And I really couldn't think of a single thing that could have used a little bit of parsley. Come on.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. And then I really hate wasting meat because meat is so resource intensive.
Yes.
Right.
Agreed.
It takes so much water, so much land, so much time, the life of an animal. It's just really a terrible, terrible thing to waste meat.
Yep. Yep. Definitely agree with that. It's funny. I think almost half of the guests we've had in this podcast have brought up herb waste. I feel like we could almost just rename the podcast How to Stop Wasting Herbs or Why
just
Herb
put them
Waste
in your
is
food.
Yeah. Just use the herbs, people, please. Yeah. I love that tip though. Like you said earlier, use more than you think you need, or just use a bunch. If the recipe calls for some, use more. Cause yeah, it would be a shame to waste them. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I am the absolute worst singer in the whole world. You do not ever want to do karaoke with me, but if it's the end of the night and everyone's really drunk, then I would sing The Tide is High by Blondie.
That's a good one. And who is somebody you admire tremendously and what do you admire about them?
I would say in our own work, one of our beloved board members and co-founders of 18 Reasons, the owner of Buy Right Market, Sam McGannum, is a personal hero of mine. He just has so much vision for what the food system can be, for what food can be in people's lives, and so much heart in how he shares that message and how he projects what he believes about food and shares that so passionately and so lovingly with the community.
Awesome. What an amazing individual. And finally, what are you grateful for this week?
I am grateful that, well, for so many things. This has been a crazy week and we've gotten so many things done at work. I'm feeling really grateful for like all the amazing people that I work with, but I'm always grateful for them. We have the best people here at 18 Reasons and I'm so grateful for every one of them and the contributions that they make and the demands that they make on me to make this organization better every day, every week. And that's why I have 50,000 meetings this week because all of my employees were like, hello, I'm here to make the organization better. Can we talk, please? And that's just really inspiring.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you making time for us to speak in the midst of so many awesome meetings. Sarah Nelson, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can folks learn more about you and the work that you do at 18 Reasons?
18reasons.org is a great place to start. And if you're into the social media, we have all of those things too.
Amazing. And we'll have links to everything we talked about today in the show notes and on our website, unwastedpodcast.com. And if you're listening, have any questions or feedback, please shoot us an email at feedback@unwastedpodcast.com. Sarah Nelson, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.